From the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Morning Drive with Nick Kale, Braden Gall, and Derek Mason. On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome to the show, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Josh Upton, and our intern who's wise beyond his years.
Who likes Jimmy J.
Jimmy J likes Prince from the 80s. He's 21 years old. Good on you. Nick
Damn
Kale.
Damn you, Jimmy. You're 21.
Nick Kale out today. A little under the weather. You said, Derek, you had some comments about
that.
I'm going to get to Nick later.
Yeah.
We're talking Matt Duchene here, as it appeared yesterday, Darren Drager reporting that $9.5 million could be the conservative number for him per year for the center. That obviously, it feels like Nashville and him have been like looking at each other from across for like years and just
like,
never had a conversation.
First move?
Right. Like, you know how you just, you know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
And so that if that's the number, what would people think about that? We're also talking about the ripple effects of what that could mean, whether that's a trade with Kyle Turris, a trade with P.K. Subban, Nick Bonino. What does that do to Grimaldi's salary potentially, or Colton Sissons, Brian Boyle, whatever. So we do want to take your calls on this, and we had a couple guys on the phone lines that want to chime in on Matt Duchene. And again, if the number starting price is $9.5 million, how do Predators fans feel if – all of a sudden, somehow, some way, David Poile does some cap gymnastics and finds space for a $10 million salary. Now you have $18 million potentially wrapped up in Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. If somehow Kyle Turris is still in the lineup,
you got another six.
You're talking $24 million for three centers, which seems highly unlikely and improbable. What would Predators fans think? Is that to finally get the Duchene thing finished? Is that worth it to people? $10 million a year? Or does it make you concerned about salary cap purgatory in the future, right? Like, are you maxing yourself a little too much here? Ryan in Mount Juliet wants to chime in. Ryan, you're first up.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Yeah, I agree with you. We could trade Torres. They can get rid of Bonino because you got Freddie Goudreau and you got other people. You can also get rid of probably Salamaki and Irwin and Weber, those people, because we still have defensemen in Milwaukee that are pretty much the prime way to come. But the fact is, you got to talk to Shane. It's, you want to come here, take the tax break. Look at all the other players you have. Arvidsson took one. Ellis just took one. Because Ellis on the end of the team could be $10 million player. I'm pretty sure Yossi's probably going to take one while he's at it too. If they want to come here that bad, they're going to talk. They're going to, David Poile is going to throw in that tax break that you get when you're playing in Nashville that you don't get from other teams.
Yeah, I mean, you're right in regards to that could be a carrot that you dangle over an individual. But, I mean, we're not the only city with a tax break or the only state with a tax break. So I think you have to – there has to be more carrots to dangle in regards to getting Matt Duchene. And right now, you know, honestly speaking, he has all the power because as much as, you know, he might want to come here, he hasn't been the one that has been – out. And I'm not saying David Poile has or Lobby, because I'm pretty sure it would be tampering in some aspect. But I think it's widely known that the Nashville Predators are one of the teams that are looking to bring in his services in this organization. And where he sits now, if you know the starting ticket is at 9.5, then maybe you get a discount at 9, or maybe you get the discount at 9.5 because maybe another team's willing to pay $10 million or 10.5. I don't think the tax break.
I mean, how did you consider that as a player?
Well, Honestly,
it is real money. Yeah, it's it is real money.
But what you got to understand, once you get in that tax bracket, you're getting taxed regardless. They're going to get their money somehow, some way, because you're going to other cities to pay, to play, and they're going. Other cities are taxing you.
Yeah, read about
for that one day, and it's crazy.
Yeah, you're talking NFL at that
point. Exactly, absolutely.
Read up on like the NFL game checks and how much money you make when you play like against the 49ers in San Francisco versus you know, the Dolphins in Miami.
The Cincinnati.
With no income tax versus like your game check gets hit a lot harder in San Francisco than it does in Miami.
The Cincinnati Bengals purposely, I mean, the city of Cincinnati purposely decided to get, what did they call it, a entertainer's tax, something like that, because before they didn't have it. And they decided that they wanted to, you know, get this, I think they call it an entertainment tax, where now, because football, you know, because sports, you know, sports freaks was coming in there and they didn't have to pay taxes on when they played that particular day. Well, it got to a point where they said, okay, y'all come here to play. Y'all eat, whatever y'all do. Y'all stand here because you stand downtown in the city. We're going to tax you for that day. And it ended up being a lot of money. So
that's why I stay in Covington.
Exactly. So you can dangle, you can dangle that carrot, but you got to understand, these guys are playing in different places, so they're going to get taxed regardless.
Yeah, I mean, income tax is a thing, though.
Like, yeah, I mean,
the income tax numbers are pretty. California income tax versus Tennessee, no income tax.
Yeah,
you
see it, but then
it eventually comes around.
Exactly, because you're playing in these other cities. Right. They're playing so many games, so the tax break is not as big as what many people think it is. Because you're playing. Now, if you played all your games here, it'd be fine. It'd be great. Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think they're. I'm sort of upset with myself for not knowing. It's not like a game check, though, right? It's not like you get a check every game in the NHL.
I would think not with three games a week, but I'm not sure.
Or sometimes none, or sometimes four, or sometimes five.
I think they get paid. Well, the way
the NFL you get it, is you get a check every game you play, right?
Well, it all depends. Like the Tennessee
Some organizations
Titans,
yeah, don't.
Tennessee Titans, we got paid, you know, twice a month, like the 1st and 15th.
That's right.
So you got taxed on two games and one check. In Baltimore, we got paid every week, so we just got taxed on that one game. So if we played at home, we would just get, you know, Maryland taxes, Baltimore taxes, Baltimore County taxes. So it all depends on how the Predators pay their players. If they pay them once a week, if they play them twice a week. Because of the games they play, I don't know how the pay structure is for NHL player, because they can end up playing, you know, if they get paid every week, they can end up playing four games, five games per week. You know, some weeks they're playing four or five games.
You know, I'm surprised to hear you kind of going down this road, because you're as from the player's perspective, I've never really heard, you don't really hear players say like, oh yeah, take the hometown discount or take the tax discount or whatever. I think if anything, it's small, right? If you're taking if you're taking a quote unquote discount, it's marginal, because if Matt Duchesne truly loves Nashville and wants to play for Peter Laviolette in this system with these guys in this town, so much so, then he'll put his money where his mouth is and he maybe won't ask for as much. If somebody else offers him too much money to go play somewhere else and they got a chance to win there, then I don't know why you wouldn't. You know, that's not necessarily going to be the deciding factor that it's Nashville, right? Like the money is still a big deal. And so I don't know how with 9.5, 10 million being the number potentially for Duchesne, I don't know. I just don't know how you make it work without a big move somewhere else. I also don't know, even if he can make it work, David Poile, what would I feel about a $10 million contract per year for a player at 28 years old who's very good, probably worth the money. But is that overextending yourself the way the Blackhawks have overextended themselves? And I'm just, even on its face, I'm more conservative when it comes to giving out huge contracts. I think you can. I trust David Poile to build and sort of develop talent.
And that's the thing.
So that makes me a little concerned. But that's just a general me thing.
And that's the thing, Dave. I'm pretty sure if Duchesne is the guy that Lobby and David and everybody in the organization is eyeing to get, then I'm pretty sure they've went over every scenario.
Oh, sure.
In regards to how do we get him. And now you figure out what the number can potentially be. Okay, let's plug in 9.5 or 10 million or 9 million, because he's not going to get less than 9 million. He's not going to take anything less than 9 million. So, you know, 8.5, 8.75, whatever. No, he's not taking less than 9 million. So you got to start at $9 million. Yeah. How does it look at $9 million moving forward?
You've got seven and some change in the salary cap. Again, we've said this a million times. You're probably you got to re-sign Sissons and Grimaldi. That's not much. It's maybe $3 million at the most, but that's not a small chunk of change.
You figure Pekka's contract is dropping
off.
Well,
I've already included that, okay. And I've included Ellis's boost in that. So you start around seven, and again, I think it's seven and some change, and then you move. You know, if it's Bonino, you got to re-sign Brian Boyle. If it's Turris, and then there's PK Subban, which again, how do people feel if you're trading away PK Subban and you don't get a contributor this year? I think that's the question that I have for people, because the one way that it feels like all these problems are solved quickly is if you can trade PK Subban and get value in return. Right? It's not a salary dump. You're getting. I would come if David Poile dumped PK Subban's salary for nothing. I would come in here.
I think a lot of people would be upset,
and I would be upset. Yeah. I think it's a wrong move. I think he's too good of a player. You need to get value back for PK Subban. Can you get that value in future assets that sets up the franchise for the next 5 or 8 years? Mm-hmm. That helps your team 5 or 8 years from now. Maybe it hurts your team today because Dante Fabro is sliding into PK Subban's spot, and he's not as good. Could he be as good one day? Maybe that's the dream. But if you do that, that then does give you a clean $9 million salary break. And that money could then immediately go to Matt Duchene, and then I feel more comfortable about it. But at the same time, then you're trading away the guy who was on Instagram all day yesterday promoting the Nashville Predators brand at the award ceremony, wearing all his fancy sunglasses and hats and looking all cool and fancy with the Rock and everything. Like, he's out there representing the brand as much as he does on the ice. So you're trading away your most high-profile
asset.
Yeah,
you are. But I think this is how you got to sort of approach it or look at it. Because, again, I'm pretty sure David Poile has went over every darn scenario that possibly known to man with plugging numbers in or whatever. If indeed Matt Duchene is the guy that they are seeking, if he's their white whale and this is the guy we need to get moving forward. It's like the Lakers and Anthony Davis. We finally got him. How do we make it work? Even though they botched
that
whole thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, look how that's playing out right now.
They botched that whole thing.
Oh, wait, crap. We don't have enough money.
But I think, I'm sure David Poile is much smarter than that. But it's the way the NHL is and the parity or the unpredictability in the playoffs. I think even if you choose to trade away PK Subban and get future assets, not necessarily assets for today, but future assets, it's going to make your team, as you said, Braden, that's going to make your team better, you know, in the long run. If they chose to go that route, I still don't think that they would be that they would slip out of the playoffs. I don't think they would slip out of the playoffs.
I agree with you.
Yeah, my thing is if you do that, you get future assets, you're still a team good enough to make the playoffs. And once you make the playoffs, all bets are off. We've seen it the last couple of years with teams getting in the playoffs and just going on a run. And just maybe, and I'm not saying this because I think PK Subban is some type of distraction or anything else. I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm saying.
So you're saying PK Subban's a distraction?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. But this is what I'm sort of what I'm saying. Maybe, just maybe, it's addition by subtraction. It's maybe this team functions different, and maybe it functions better on ice when you take away said person.
Because
you're not. Sometimes teams handicap themselves with the star player because they're looking for the star player to do so much. And if you remove that star player, we've seen it in sports all the time. Once that star player gets hurt, everybody else comes in, and it seems like the team plays better.
Some of the parts greater than the whole.
Absolutely, it seems like the team just plays better, that could be a possibility.
It's possible. I'd rather go to battle with PK Subban than without him.
Oh yeah, I would too.
But I follow what you're saying, and I see where you're going with that. And it is, frankly, the fact that we can even have this conversation. Mm-hmm. Because essentially this is a move that a team would make if they were trying to sell at the trade deadline, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a non-contender type of move to trade PK Subban for future assets.
Exactly.
It's a non-contender type of move. So the fact that we can even have the discussion as potentially viable, and again, neither one of us think it's going to happen. It's just we're just having a conversation here. that you could be a team that is a contender and a division champion and also be looking to rebuild at the same time mm-hmm. is a testament to where this roster is. And to
but that's
the
what
job
great teams
Poyle,
do.
And that's what David Poyle has done. So we've got to give him a lot of credit for that. All right, more of your phone calls. I know people want to chime in here on this when we come back. We do have to get to a lot of other stuff as well. We've got the NBA draft coming up tonight, a lot of Vols action. Mm-hmm. Three Kentucky players could go in the first round. You got Darius Garland projected at the top. Of course, my Knicks will screw it all up. but we'll get to that as well. But if you guys want to continue to chime in on this, whether it's PK Subban for future assets, Turris, Duchesne's asking price, whatever, phone lines are open. So if you want to get in, Nick Cale out, Chase McCabe on a Brodeo somewhere.
Brodeo 2019.
I don't know where he is. What he's doing. Can we call him again? Have we got an update from Chase? No? Okay.
He'll text me back, maybe.
Maybe an update when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Morning Drive. Welcome back, Derek
Just
Mason, Brain Gall.
Day,
oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Derek.
When you walk, even when you talk, you take over me just like candy.
Man, that's the song.
That is making me uncomfortable. Josh, you're in a different room. Be thankful. Be thankful.
I love that song.
Nick Cale out. Derek will eventually have something to say about that. Chase McCabe, any update on Chase McCabe? Do we have any information about where he is? Is he passed out in a parking lot in his car? Is he asleep at a shrimp buffet in a casino somewhere? Is he still up and playing cards? I'd like to know. I would put Chase McCabe up against anybody in that group that he could last longer, by the way. I got faith in my guy.
You think?
He's probably the youngest, right?
Yeah, and he's single. I think he can do it.
I don't know.
Hangs out with Ricky, so Ricky teaches him well. I wonder, do people on our show that listen know who Ricky is?
Like,
do they know that person is like a real thing?
Yeah, I think they do.
Okay.
I believe.
Because we mention him a lot on the show.
He's sort of this kind of like trinket that sits over on the side that we kind of talk about every now and then.
You just call Ricky a trinket. That is Chase McCabe's heterosexual life partner. Don't mess with him.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. By the way, we're sort of brainstorming here and having some fun with Pred's potential moves. What does it look like for the future, all that kind of stuff? You did have some information on how the Predators players get paid, Josh. Is that correct?
Yep. NHL players are paid. Is bi-monthly, twice a month?
Yes, we'll go with that.
I think it is, yeah.
Bi-monthly, mm-hmm. twice a month for the regular season, generally October through April.
Right. Yeah, so that is that's typically bi-monthly because that's how the Titans –
But that's unusual in the NFL.
Yeah, really, a lot of NFL teams like to pay you weekly so they can get it over with.
Brian in Clarksville wants to start us off here. Brian, what's up, man?
Brayden, you kept bringing up the Blackhawks and how their contracts have sort of gotten them into cap situation purgatory. The beginning of those contracts that they signed, how many cups and how many parades did those get? And if I can trade terrible contracts for, I can't remember how many they got. Was it three or four?
Three.
If I can trade three parades for terrible contracts and then that puts me in purgatory for 5 years, I'm willing to make that trade.
Brian, I could not agree more. I think we all agree that we would trade. Like, how many bad years of hockey would you trade for three cups? For two cups? For a cup?
I think it's
I would trade 10 years of bad hockey for a cup.
I guess the ratio would be two per cup. Two bad years per cup.
Oh, no chance. I will give you 10 years per cup.
Are you serious?
Yes.
10 years per cup?
Yes. Give me the championship.
No, I can't go that
long.
That's like Carolina.
Ask me.
You want to be the Hurricanes.
Ask me in year seven of the bad years, I might tell you
exactly.
Something different.
And what do you consider, are you considered like bad years, meaning they are the worst team in the NHL?
They make the playoffs two times in 10 years. Mm-hmm.
No.
Which is well below any Predator standard ever.
You give me, for every cup, for every cup you give me 3 years, three bad years.
How about five?
No.
No, because you
too
can't.
Much.
Because you can't trade. No, everyone in their right mind makes that deal. No one says no to 3 years of bad hockey. If you told me I missed the playoffs for 3 years for a cup, every single human on the planet is taking that deal.
You
got to make
it
more costly.
Every decade.
Like these guys. Yeah, right. Exactly. The Blackhawks won three championships mm-hmm. and ended up in cup purgatory. He's absolutely right. that was the, like, they had already, I think they had already won one by the time they started giving out these huge contracts. And then by the time they ended up in purgatory, they had already won two more championships. That is clearly, obviously, the goal. There's no question about that. If you sign Matt Duchene to $10 million a year, you are starting to expect, like, you, the expectation already today is a cup, right? So if you're adding more expectation to that, again, I totally agree. Like, if you're promising me a cup, the problem with hockey is that you cannot promise anything. Mm-mm. Like, you just can't, and that's what makes it so complicated. That's why you have to be considering the future if you're David Poile, even if he's not even going to be around for more than two or three more years as the GM. But I agree. I would trade 5 or 6 or 7 bad years of hockey, meaning no playoffs, for a single cup. I got no problem with that, and I think everybody else makes that deal too. Kyle, in my neighborhood, East Nashville, what's up, Kyle?
Yeah, I would trade probably 4 because your superstars are coming from, like, the first 5 or 6 picks in the draft. And I don't know if we've ever even had that. But either way, so as far as the cap goes, or what the Predators' future is facing, I don't like the Mikael Granlund contract. It's like there's one more year left, $5.7 million. I mean, that's a hefty bit. I would ship him out. Then possibly Nick Bonino. He's been a great third-line center, but maybe you can move Turris back to the third line. I know he's $6 million a year, but the fact is I think he'll have a rebound year. But by freeing up that amount of money, you don't have to move PK, and you can possibly bring in Matt Duchene or some other second-line center. I don't know how many he's left in free agency, but I think that would be the most optimal move, because without PK, I think we're a worse team.
And Kyle, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think it's hard to take PK Subban off this team and not see a drop off. Like, he's just too good of a player.
I can't remember because the seasons are so long. If I recall, this team, when PK was injured, this team, I'm not saying that they, you know, lit the world on fire, but this team would, they were able to, you know, stay status quo. Were they or were they not? They still play good hockey without PK Subban. Now, can they do that for a full year and beyond without a guy like PK? I don't know. But they did. I think when PK got hurt, I think everyone started to pour their weight, so to speak. Now, can they do that over 82 games, you know, over multiple years? I don't know.
There's no way this team is better without PK Subban. I agree. Now, if you get a equal value center or frontline top two line player forward, is it possible to be as good? Maybe. I think you can. The future asset idea or sort of hypothetical that we're just randomly throwing out there because it's June, I think that, you know, I think that's a very unlikely possibility, but we're trying to consider all the options, right? I mean, that's what David Poile's job is to do, is to consider all the options and look at everything. And it's, if Matt Duchene's asking price is $10 million, it's hard to see a way to get that money to fit under the salary cap. That's it. I mean, without making big, massive moves, and the most likeliest moves right now are Nick Bonino, Kyle Turris, and PK Subban. Those are the three moves that everyone talks about. Now, Mikael Granlund is interesting. I think he's a good player, worthy of the money he's making. I like the idea that his contract comes off the books at the end of the next year, that you get a year of rental, year and some change of a rental to see what he's got. He's a young enough player that if he's good enough and he has a good enough year this year, that you can re-sign him if you want to, because he's worth the money, especially when Craig Smith's contract comes off the books. Essentially, you get to pick, right? Mikael Granlund, Craig Smith, who do we want? Granlund is more talented and younger. Maybe it costs you more, but you've got a chance to choose between the two and see them in the system for a year. We know what Craig Smith is, obviously. See Granlund in the system for a year. So I'm not as worried about Granlund's contract, because I think that works itself out. If they do just let him walk, by the way, then that helps open up money for Roman Josi's contract that kicks in at the start of next season. So not next year, but the following year. So it's all just cap gymnastics at this point for David Poile. Right now it seems incredibly difficult to get that $10 million salary in onto the books. But are we all going to bet against David Poile figuring something out?
Nope.
No. No chance. I'll bet on that guy figuring something out, because that's what he's done his entire career. All right, we'll take a quick break here. I want to switch gears. We've done a lot of Preds talk this morning. The NBA draft is coming up tonight. There's a lot of local ties. You got Belmont players, Murray State players, Vanderbilt's Darius Garland's on the board, of course, really early in the draft. You got 3 Kentucky guys, 3 Vols, a lot of good stuff to get to. We'll talk with Jordan Brenner coming up in about 15 minutes, but we'll get Derek. I want to get your thoughts on what you expect to see to happen tonight at the start of the NBA draft. But before we do that, I got to tell you about my great folks at Xfinity, because, you know, this is a time of year when you turn on the television at night and you're like, the U.S. women's national team is playing today. You got Vandy baseball going on right now, competing for a national championship as they won yesterday. You got the NBA draft tomorrow night. You got the NHL draft. You got all these random different sporting events, and you don't always know where they're located on the dial. This is where Xfinity's X1 voice remote comes in. You just push the little button and you say whatever you want. NHL draft, NBA draft, World Cup soccer. They've got the instant replays, by the way, already sitting there waiting for you in 4K of the World Cup, Women's World Cup games if you miss them. So this is where the X1 voice remote is so helpful. It makes life simple, easy, and awesome. You push the button, you say what you want, it pops up on the screen, you hit the button, and you're watching what you want to watch. You don't even need to know what the channels are. In fact, my wife's had Xfinity now for, I don't know how long, two years? I bet you she couldn't even tell you a single channel what number they are. She doesn't need it because she uses the X1 voice remote. That's how simple, easy, and awesome Xfinity makes your television entertainment today. So check them out, 1-800-XFINITY, Xfinity.com, or pop into an Xfinity store today for more details. ESPN 94.9 Game 2 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in Saturday as Nashville SC takes on the Ottawa Fury FC at First Tennessee Park. Pregame begins at 6:45 p.m. with kickoff at 7 p.m. only on ESPN 94.9 Game 2, powered by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers. Excited to get back on the call myself on that one with Wes Bowling, of course, on the radio. Our boys playing pretty good soccer right now. U.S. men's national team winning, of course, on Tuesday night over Guyana in the start of the Gold Cup. And then the U.S. women's today, they take on Sweden at 2 o'clock Central Time. I don't even know what the spread is, but I see my two gamblers are gone. Derek, I need my gamblers.
Yes, they are.
What do they gamble on? Women's World Cup soccer? That's what
no.
I want.
No. No.
Continue efforting Chase McKay, by the way. Find out if he's alive, Josh. I've got some questions. We're going to talk with Jordan Brenner covering the NBA draft from The Athletic coming up next segment. Draft coming up tonight. I've got a few questions I want to ask you, Derek. Just, you know, you're my resident NBA guru. And you've been strangely successful at predicting strange things, like the Capitals winning the cup. You picked the Warriors to lose, even though it was to Milwaukee, whatever. You picked them to lose, so yeah, that happened.
I picked this year's hockey winner. St. Louis. I picked the Blues to win.
Does your prediction count if you can't remember it?
Yes, it still counts. The Blues. Okay. I picked the Blues to win.
So let me ask you this.
It was last week.
Yeah, it was last week, and I can't remember. And they just had a parade.
The top
it might have been this week.
So the five. Exactly. So the five. It feels like the top of the draft, at least the first four picks, have been largely set in stone for a long time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like you're looking at Zion Williamson to the Pelicans at one. You've got Ja Morant to Memphis at two. You've got R.J. Barrett to the Knicks at three. And then at the time, it was Darius Garland to the Lakers because he had signed with LeBron's agent and he was going to go to the Lakers. And now it looks like Darius Garland to the Pelicans at number four because they acquired that pick. Do you think that is what we see happen tonight? Do you think there's a major shakeup? And how do my New York Knicks screw it all up?
The Knicks might do some Knickish things. Obviously, the Pelicans, for some strange reason, they were trying to move up in the draft.
Why?
To get R.J. Barrett. That was the rumor. To try to, you know,
package him together.
Package him, he and Zion back together. I don't think that works in the NBA.
Garland is an awesome consolation prize.
Would they go for a point guard? Probably not, because they already have a point guard in New Orleans. So do they go for, you know,
I've heard them trading back Barrett. To get a veteran piece because they got so many young players.
Yeah,
now
they could. There are a bunch of Horford has opted out of his deal. The young man Millsap for Milwaukee. He's opted out of
Middleton.
Opted out of his final year, but the assumption is he just wants to sign a max deal back with Milwaukee. So he could also be in play if indeed Milwaukee doesn't give him a max deal. He can go somewhere else and get that max deal. He's an excellent 3-point shooter. He has an all-around good game. Nickish.
Why would the top three picks not be what they are? Like, why would it not be Zion, Morant, and RJ in some order?
Unless the Knicks move out of three, because of what the Grizzlies did yesterday by trading away Conley, because we all assume they're going to get Jay Morant. So by trading away Conley, we assume that it's going to be status quo. Zion, Jay Morant, at least 1-2. Now, I think three is where it gets tricky, because the Knicks need a bunch of stuff. And I know the Knicks are hoping, you know, they are wishing and praying that Kevin Durant, even with an Achilles injury, that he chooses to come to New York and play. Even with an Achilles injury, even though he will not start the season. You know, on the active opening day roster.
He might not even be there halfway through the
season. Exactly.
Year.
I mean, he might not be there closer to the playoffs.
Right.
Even with that, I believe the Knicks are hoping that either Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, maybe Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, I think he's going to be a free agent. Al Horford, he's opted out. One of these big name, Klay Thompson, one of these big name guys come to New York.
I've got one more question to ask you about the Tennessee Vols, but before we do, as a Knicks fan, I'll just say what I want. Mm-hmm. If they do not take one of those four players at the top of the draft, because I think R.J. Barrett, again, you've heard me say this, I think R.J. Barrett might be the best of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be totally fine with R.J. Barrett at number three. In fact, that's what I'd be rooting for. I would also be totally fine with Darius Garland. I think that's how good Darius Garland is. I'd be fine with him at number three. I'd be fine with Ja Morant at number three, and certainly Zion's not going to fall out of the first spot. But if they do something other than take one of those four players. Now, Jarrett Culver is a great prospect. Uh-huh. I like his game. 6'7", great defensive player, can play swing. He fits the modern NBA game. Out of Texas Tech, the kid who led mm-hmm. Texas Tech to the national championship game. I love him, but you know, R.J. Barrett was the number one recruit in the nation for a reason. Everybody saw his upside from an early age, and if they do something other than take one of those top four players, I'll be disappointed.
I can see them possibly taking Kobe White because
I do like Kobe White. He's a heck of a player.
The Knicks need an overhaul on their roster, point blank. So they can take Kobe White. They could take DeAndre Hunter, the forward out of Virginia. And this might end up being the wild card because many believe that this particular guy might have suffered because of the other two guys on his team, meaning Zion Williams and R.J. Barrett. Cam Reddish is one of these guys that he's very, very intriguing to NBA scouts or NBA owners shareholders.
Upside guy.
Yeah. He's one of these guys at 6'7", 6'8", that plays good defense. He's proven during these camps, during these workouts, that he's a good shooter from the outside, three-point range. He's a slasher. He can get to the basket. He wasn't able to display all of that because Duke had 1-2, meaning the number one player in the country and the second best player in the country, and R.J. Barrett and Zion Williams. So he was sort of the third wheel, and many believe he didn't get an opportunity to showcase his talent. Now, when Zion went down, that was an opportunity for him to step up. Did he step up the way many thought he should have? Probably not.
And that weird situation in the NCAA tournament where he missed the game, like just didn't play in a game. Like that was, there, he had a very bizarre freshman.
But he has
season,
a lot. He has a huge upside. Yeah. So if the Knicks were to take him
most,
at three,
that
would be the more Nick. That would be the biggest Nickish thing to do.
I knew you'd find something that pissed me off.
But don't get mad if I'm just warning you.
These are guys
that they can go choose to get instead of R.J. Barrett.
I don't know why anyone would think of that. And the thing is, I like those players. I think they're nice players. I think Kobe White's a nice, intriguing prospect. Incredibly explosive, great athlete, 6'5", 6'6". R.J. Barrett is. I mean,
he's the third best player in the draft.
He might be the first best player in the draft. Like, I'm not, you know, that's a little crazy, but like he might be the best. So, I don't know. If they do anything but take R.J. Barrett, Ja Morant, and I'd be fine with Darius Garland, but that's even my fourth option. If they don't take one of the top three, I'd be upset. And I think the Knicks do. They sort of hold. The Knicks are going to do something, either good or bad, that changes the dynamics of the top 10, right? Like, it's always the Knicks. It's just count on it.
But a lot of what the Knicks are going to do at three is predicated on how how much or how confident are they in getting a max player?
Yeah, no question. All right, last question on this for you before we get to Jordan Brenner from The Athletic covering the draft coming up next. If the Tennessee Volunteers players, Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams, Jordan Bone, if all three of them fall into the second round, but all three of them are drafted in the second round, how do you view tonight as a Tennessee fan? Do you view it still as a success? You had three players off one team get drafted into the NBA. I still think there's a lot of positives to be taken from that. Do you view that as a, like, hey, people made the right decision, people made the wrong decision, it's a success, it's a failure? How do you view that if that happens tonight?
I mean, obviously the players probably think it was a failure, meaning I think one player would think it was a failure, and that's Grant Williams, because right now ESPN has him drafted 31st to the Nets. I think Grant Williams see it as a disappointment. Now, Schofield and Bone, I don't think – now, everybody wants to be drafted in the first round. Everybody wants to be a lottery pick. But realistically, I think second round – is where Schofield and Jordan Bone. And if they can get drafted in the second round, I think they're happy. I think the move to leave for Bone is then justified because he did get drafted by an NBA team. Schofield, the decision to come back a year would be justified because he did get drafted, albeit the second round, he got drafted. If Grant Williams falls to the second round, I think there would be some disappointment.
Yeah. Grant Williams projected 31st to the Nets, as you mentioned, in the latest ESPN mock draft. You got Admiral Schofield going 38 to the Bulls, and you've got Jordan Bone going 57 to the Pelicans. Again, I think you could spin it very easily as, man, look at this team that we had three players drafted in the NBA draft in 1 year. That's a remarkable accomplishment. But considering where we thought these guys might go, mm-hmm. it feels like a disappointment if that happens to
them. I think Jordan Bone's going to end up getting drafted before Schofield.
I think you're right.
I think he's going to get drafted for Schofield. He's going to get drafted early in the second round.
They are a fascinating collection. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that if Grant and Bone go late in the second round, that the decision to go pro, you probably should have come back. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it. It's not necessarily the way they look at it, because that's a chance for them to get their career started, mm-hmm. make some money, and get into the NBA and fulfill a dream. I can't hate on a guy for that at all. So we'll see. We'll talk to Jordan Brenner when we come back. All these questions for him. Covering the NBA draft for The Athletic when we come back right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. I almost forgot where we were sitting there for a second. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, efforting Jordan Brenner from the NBA draft. Dylan Windler from Belmont projected in the second round. I'd love to see him go a little higher in the draft. I think
great
he's pretty
shooter.
Good. He's a really good player. I think he's going to be. And then Garrison Matthews, of course, as well from Lipscomb. So we'll see. We're efforting Jordan here? Okay, efforting Jordan Brenner from The Athletic. D-Mace, I don't know what we were talking about Tennessee before we mm-hmm. went to break, and we were talking during the break. I think it's a disappointment for Grant Williams if he doesn't get drafted in the first round, and mm-hmm. and I wonder if I told Grant Williams, hey, you're going to be a second-round pick, would you come back? And then Jordan Bones, I think Jordan Bones' perfect scenario at Tennessee would have been had Grant Williams come back. Because mm-hmm. if he's got to be there by himself and Jordan Bones got to be the guy – that makes life more difficult on him. Coaches are focusing on him every single night. He becomes somebody that everyone game plans for, and it makes it harder on him to be a good player. But if Grant Williams is back mm-hmm. and Jordan Bone is on that team, I think that's the perfect sweet spot of he's asked to do more because Admiral Schofield's not there, but he also isn't the focal point because Grant Williams is there. So I wonder how – I would love to have known the conversations between Jordan Bone and Grant Williams. So we'll continue this conversation as Jordan's ready to go. Is that what I'm getting the symbol here for, the signal from Josh? Jordan Brenner from The Athletic covering the NBA draft. Jordan, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. All right. So as the resident Knicks fan on the show, I was at
– Oh, I'm so sorry.
I know. Thank you. Condolences, thoughts, and prayers. I was at Game 6 in Houston as a 12-year-old. I cried on the way home that night. But anyway, people don't forget. So how will the Knicks screw this up? And is there anything that would surprise you out? Like, what would surprise you outside of Zion 1, Ja Morant 2, RJ Barrett and Darius Garland 3 and 4? Is there any reason to suspect something else happens outside of that?
Well, I too cried that night as a Knicks fan at the time. I've long since abandoned that terrible, terrible disease. But I don't think Garland. You know, I'm not sure that's a total lock at 4. I think the Pelicans very likely could move that pick. So I think the draft really starts at 4. You know, as the cliche goes, right? Like I think we can settle in on the top 3. I don't know that the Knicks can screw it up because I'm a fan of RJ Barrett. But then again, they are the Knicks, so you never know, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Is there any truth to the rumors that the Pelicans wanted to move up in the draft to try to pair Zion with RJ Barrett? And if there is, do you think, if that indeed was to happen, how do you think that works with those two guys playing in the NBA together? It works well in college, but do you think it works well in the NBA?
So, I mean, I haven't done any reporting on that front. I would not necessarily, again, like I haven't even seen where that's been reported. But I would be kind of surprised if they were looking to use their draft capital to pair those two. I think they're both really good players. I don't think it's the best pairing in the NBA, not because they play the same position. They don't, but because both of them have the same, weakness, which is their range on their jump shot. And, you know, shooting is such a premium in the league right now that you probably don't want to, at least at the start, put those two guys in a lineup that also includes Lonzo Ball, whose weakness is also a three-point shot, and suddenly you're scrambling for shooting. Again, you're thinking long-term if you're the Pelicans. You're thinking about assets down the line, but it's probably not the most natural fit. You even saw that, you know, at Duke this year, you know, I think people wrongly saw them as a juggernaut because they weren't, because they were so compromised with their shooting that it was a real weakness that top teams generally don't have. So I think that would be the trouble in pairing them.
Kentucky seems sort of surprisingly absent from the lottery this year, although PJ Washington I've seen projected in the top 13. You certainly got a couple other kids on that roster that could go highly in the draft. Tyler Herro can shoot the lights out, obviously, and then you look at Keldon Johnson, who it seems like his stock has fallen despite being a high-level draft pick or high-level prospect coming out of high school. What do you make of the Kentucky trio, and am I out of line to think PJ Washington is a little underrated?
No, I don't think you're out of line at all. I've heard various people, you know, indicating that they like him more than where he's projected to go. I think the other thing is that like once you get past the top 3, this draft flattens out really quickly, and it's going to be so much about fit, at least for initial impact with these guys. Who goes to the right system? Who goes to the right coaching staff? Who goes somewhere where they can show their stuff versus having to wait? And I just don't think there's a huge difference in talent from mid lottery to maybe mid first round. And I just don't see a lot of potential superstars in that mix. So all those types of guys, then it's about circumstance, but yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong at all about, the upside on a PJ Washington, which is why, you know, maybe he should go a little bit before some of the guys projected ahead of him who don't have as quite as high a ceiling.
Now, the trio out of UT, Grant Williams, Schofield, and Jordan Bone, all of them, well, Schofield graduated, so he had to leave. But Schofield, Bone and Williams decided to forego their senior season and enter the draft. If Williams is drafted in the second round, because there are some mocks that have him in the first round, there are some, the latest one by ESPN has him at 31 to the Nets. If he is indeed drafted in the second round, would it be, how much of a disappointment, if at all, would it be to Grant Williams that he decided to forego his last year and enter the NBA draft, where he could have came back and maybe polished up more on his outside jump shot and possibly could have pushed himself, not lottery, but in the first round?
You know, I don't think there's a lot of room compared to football, where you can do so much in a year. You're playing, you know,
there's so much more development that can be done in a year. Mm-hmm. I don't think in basketball, there's especially a guy like Grant Williams who's maybe limited in terms of athleticism to a certain degree. I don't think there's a lot he could have done in one more year to show people at Tennessee that scouts didn't already see or at least imagine being able to see projecting him into an NBA system. The NBA player development system is so good right now that guys would rather get them into their own systems early, work with them. They've got, you know, more and more teams just are directing all sorts of coaching resources towards preparing young players, getting them ready for on their timetable. That it's really more for me about guys with significant upside than it is about another year in college. Maybe he added he shot 40% from three instead of 35. Like, that's not going to move the needle for most NBA GMs. So I don't think Grant Williams can or should be disappointed if he falls to the top of the second round. And a lot of times, like, ending up in the top of the second round is a good thing because you're going to a bad team where you have a chance to play right away. And, you know, yes, you don't get the guaranteed contract right away, but the flip side is you're out of that, you know, whatever deal you sign quicker, and you can, you know, get into a situation where you can make more money faster.
Jordan Brennan from The Athletic covering the NBA draft. Enjoy. I'm sure you'll be tweeting all the picks early tonight ahead of their announcement. So
never. Plus, no one's telling me picks. I'll just be watching Woj like the rest of you.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. We appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Absolutely. Jordan Brennan there from The Athletic covering the NBA draft. We can follow up on what he had to say there, because I thought the development has changed in the NBA, right? I think that's a new thing in the NBA, and we can get to some of that as well when we come back. Corey Curtis going to join us next hour as well. Stick to sports, so don't go anywhere, folks. Derek has a rant about Nick Cale as well, so we got a lot to do next hour. Mm-hmm. We got a lot to do. Morning Drive. We'll be right back.